to the Revel Wireless Hotline we go, and we're joined right now by Scott Petrak, who covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Scott, I want to get your big-picture thoughts of the offseason, but before we go there, just want to give you a chance to weigh in on the news of the last few days, and that, of course, being Josh Gordon's suspension and the impact you think it's going to have on the Browns.
Yeah, obviously, it's a blow, Vic. I think the biggest thing is Josh is the clear number one receiver, the most talented guy, you know, 6'3", 230, runs a 4.35. So when he's there, it kind of slots all the other receivers in their right spots. Greg Little's probably best at a 2, Devon Best is a 3, and then you throw in guys like David Nelson and Travis Benjamin. So when Josh is missing, everybody kind of has to move up, and it just doesn't feel right. I think they took a break with it only being 2 games. You know, maybe you can still beat Miami in the opener, and if you get out of the first 2 games 1-1 and Josh comes back refocused, you'll be okay. But you got to question the decision-making process because, you know, you can only blame Josh for getting caught and getting suspended.
Yeah, definitely, as far as judgment and so on and so forth. But you're right about that. I think the fact that it is only 2 games and the fact that it looks like this receiving core is deeper certainly than we thought it would be a year ago. I mean, the addition of Bess and I think the overall improvement of some of the other players. I think Travis Benjamin is a better receiver than he was a year ago, and I think there's reason to think that Greg Little can step up into the role of number one guy for at least those 2 games.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the depth really showed during the whole mini camps. Like you said, Benjamin had a great offseason program, and I think the position is better suited to handle it. Especially when you compare it to, you know, the Joe Hayden suspension from last year, the Browns didn't have that depth at corner, and it showed, and they went 0-4. And I think they're, you know, better equipped to absorb Josh not being there for 2 games. It's still not ideal, obviously.
As you look at the rest of what this team did through the offseason, and Josh was a big part of that story because he looked impressive, the receivers looked impressive, but I thought Brandon Whedon looked to be the guy that made the statement, this is my job, and I'm keeping it.
Oh, there's no doubt. And, you know, I've been a Whedon guy, you know, since he got here. But I thought he had a really good offseason, all the practices that we were able to watch. Especially, you know, the first practice we got to watch of the offseason, he struggled. And then he admitted it. Then he came back and threw the ball well. Every practice after that I saw, I think North Turner's offense fits him. If you put enough pieces around him, which I think the Browns are trying to do and have done to a certain extent, then Whedon's going to be able to flourish. He throws the ball great. And, you know, he made a couple adjustments. His footwork has gotten better. You know, he's never going to be a blazer, but he's got his footwork is better. And he removed that pad of the ball, and I concentrated that on watching that the last minicamp practice, and he doesn't do that anymore. And it allows him to get rid of the ball a little quicker, which is huge in this league. So I've been really impressed how he's kind of taken that responsibility and the job and run with it, at least at this point.
Yeah, and I like that because it's one thing to talk about it, and he did talk about it, but he really let his actions speak, and I think he took it upon himself to say, okay, there's doubts about me, and it's not the public or the media. There's doubts within this football team. I've got to prove these decision makers wrong if they question me, and I'm not even sure necessarily that they're, you know, in no way do I think they're rooting against him or think that he can't be the guy, but they're open to seeing, because he wasn't the guy they picked, they're open to seeing exactly what he's all about. And I think for Whedon's part, it's important that he went about it instead of playing afraid and fearing that if he does the wrong thing, it'll hurt him. It looks like he threw caution to the wind for the most part in these practices and was just flinging it all over the place.
Yeah, I agree with that. And even with his tone with the media, there's more of a business-like tone this year. You know, he's still friendly with us and that kind of thing, but it's, you know what, I got a job to do. There's some doubt among the media. There's some doubt within my team. I'm going to show everybody. And I do think it was important, while I know that the Browns decision makers are still playing, you know, wait and see. He's got to prove to us that he's going to be our long-term answer. I think it's important that the coaching staff gave him every rep at the once. So that the team isn't doubting who their starting quarterback is going to be. Whedon feels, you know what, I'm getting every opportunity to secure this job and to prove who I am. So I think that's important because you don't want that cloud hanging over that quarterback position, because if Whedon has a good year, this team can be good. So while the big picture is maybe unsettled, I think the coaches did a good job by saying, you know what, you're our guy. Go prove to us that you can be our starter.
Scott Petrek is with us on the Revel Wireless Hotline. He covers the Browns for the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. Scott, as we look at the rest of the offense, and in particular a couple of players whose injury concerns this offseason have become stories, the biggest being Trent Richardson for not participating in a good portion of the offseason workouts, the other one being Jordan Cameron and his couple of things, the groin muscle strain that he had, and then it looked like he had had a tightening of his leg in the latter portion of workouts. So as we look at those two guys and how important they are to this team and what their contributions can be, let's start with Richardson. Do you have cause to be concerned at this point?
You know what? I have no doubt that Trent's going to be there week one, and he's going to play, whether it's 14, 15, 16 games. I know he's a gamer, and that he's going to show up on Sundays. The concern for me is that maybe he's never going to be 100% all the time. You know, you need a guy, especially number three pick in a draft, that you're counting on to carry the ball or to touch the ball maybe 25, 30 times a game. You'd like if you saw him in his full capacity for an extended period of time, and we never saw that last year. You know, maybe week two against Cincinnati, but he's still coming off the knee, and then 4 weeks later he gets a rib and he was never the same. So I question whether or not he's ever going to be completely healthy, but I don't question whether or not he's going to show up on Sunday and still be the best option for the Browns at running back. And they need him. You know, I was talking to one of the players off the record, and he's like, you know, we need Trent, and I've told Trent that we need him out there on Sundays.
Yeah, and I think that's the message that's got to come through, Scott. And especially now, this is where the entire team, these first two games, and look, right now the story is, all right, no Josh Gordon for the first two games. I mean, you could be dealing with injuries. You could be dealing with anything else that could come aboard between now and the start of the season. But for the here and now, I think the message has to be clear how much you're needed, even if Gordon weren't suspended, but how much more you're needed and how much more everybody is needed, right, on both sides of the ball to step up and show that level of maturity, that's what good teams do when hit with a crisis.
Well, that's exactly right. And you always point to your best players when there's a time of crisis. You know, and Trent's one of this team's best players, and he better be because they took him third in the draft. And we talk so much about Norv Turner's downfield passing attack, but the fact is he pounds the ball with the running back, and he always has, and that allows the passing game to open up. So Trent's going to be a focal point, and I know that the Browns have a lot of depth at running back now, but they don't have the bell cow behind Trent. You know, so they need Trent to be healthy and for Norv's offense to be clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, and speaking of clicking on all cylinders, the tight end is such an important part of that. So Jordan Cameron, that's another guy that, again, has to be healthy, has to be in there, because I still think the sky is the limit. And I know we've had these discussions before about other players on the Browns and maybe other players in football or sports in general. If he only were healthy, if he only stayed healthy, how great could that guy be? As I look at Cameron, I see a guy who can definitely make an enormous impact as a tight end if he's just able to stay in one piece.
Well, yeah, he's incredibly talented. And we saw that during the offseason, made a couple downfield catches where he would go up and over guys, and that's his basketball background shining through. But when you talk about guys who get injured, and Cameron, you know, he hasn't missed a lot of games in his career, but he's kind of always had a nagging thing. If you haven't had that track record of success, I think it's easier to doubt. It's easier to write off a guy. So I still need to see Jordan Cameron prove to me that he can produce at this level, at the position, which he's only played for a few years, and show that he can be that guy, or else, you know what, I think me and the Browns as an organization would be quicker to move on from him. So he needs to get that hamstring figured out in week or day one of training camp, come in, stay healthy throughout training camp, and be ready to go week one, because the tight end's a big part of this offense, and he's the clear-cut number one guy. But to me, there's still a big question mark there.
A guy that I think on the defensive side of the ball that might not have gotten enough attention through these offseason workouts, because again, they are off-season workouts, and we don't see contact and engaging what defenders do is all the much tougher because of that. But Jabal Sheard, Scott, watching him, right? I mean, he lined up at that right outside linebacker position for the most part. I know they moved him to the left side occasionally, but he was mostly on that right side. And my God, he looked at home. He looked like he was flying off the ball. He just looked like he could be a real beast at that position.
No, you're right. That's a good point, because I had serious doubts about Jabal being able to make that switch from defensive end to the outside linebacker spot. He'd never done it before. I talked to him after one of the early offseason practices, you know, and he seemed like he was he was open to the move, but I wasn't sure that he'd been able to do it. And then I thought even during the draft, I mean, once they took Mingo, I thought, man, maybe they'll trade Shirt. And then, you know, Joe Banner quickly quashed it and said, no, we're keeping Shirt. We like what we're doing here. And then he went out, and I thought he had a real good offseason. You know, he's not as fluid as Mingo, you know, but he weighs, you know, maybe 25, 30 pounds more, so you wouldn't expect it. But he showed some ability to drop, and I think he's still going to be able to get to the pass rusher. And you're going to see him moving to end in some nickel situations, which will be more like he's used to. So I thought this transition was smooth, and they're really building something there at outside linebacker when you throw in Kruger and then Quentin Groves on the other side.
Yeah, and that trio – or that foursome, I should say,
yeah.
Is something that is very interesting, because you forget about, or I say you forget about Groves, but I mean, he didn't come in with the same marquee splash as a Paul Kruger, but he looks like he could be an effective edge rusher. And then you throw in Kruger and Sheard and Mingo, and with that group of guys, I don't know that you can have them on the field at the same time necessarily, but if you get three of them on the field at various times, you're putting some heat on a quarterback, I think.
Well, yeah, and that's the goal. And that's a position you need your passers to come from. And that wasn't the case the last time the Browns played the 3-4. They didn't have those studs at outside linebacker. And this is what this regime is trying to do, and I think they've taken those steps. And, you know, we talk about depth, and more than just this position. Compared to the roster maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I think you can see gains and depth in a lot of places. Not every place. There's still spots where you go, okay, they could use another guy or two. But outside linebacker is one where they have depth, and it should prove them well.
Yeah, and then we talk about the secondary, which would be the other big topic where there's position battles to look at. From the cornerback's perspective, I look at Leon McFadden and think that he could be someone who could lock that position down at some point. But I'm wondering in the meantime if there's going to be greater comfort in just having a Buster Screen, because he's got the experience, step in there, or a Chris Owens spend more time at that spot and then figure out how to work the slot position with either Leon developing there or perhaps rotating those three between the outside and the inside.
I think that's going to be a question that doesn't get answered until the end of the preseason. I think when the Browns look at paper and they want to happen is Leon McFadden to win that starting job opposite Joe Hayden. And then you can go Buster, Chris Owens, and your nickel and dime packages, because that's where they're better suited, especially size-wise. But Leon McFadden has to prove that he can start in this league, and he didn't get a whole lot of reps at the ones when we were watching practice, so he's still got a long way to go, and he's going to have, you know, 6 weeks during training camp and the preseason to prove if he can be the guy. And if he can't, then you got that decision between Buster and Chris Owens, both a little undersized, both with some experience. You know, Buster, he keeps impressing these guys. And, you know, I wouldn't worry if I had to start Buster for a while. I just don't think it's ideal, because I think he can be a better-than-average slot guy, and I think that's just where he's perfectly suited for. You know, but he could play on the outside if you need him to and if McFadden's not ready.
Yeah, and then the safety position would be the other one to look at, and I think Tashaun Gibson is providing some level of comfort to this coaching staff that he can step in there, at least be the guy for the time being at free safety until maybe a better answer comes about. And I'm not saying that he can't be the better answer either, but obviously they drafted Jamar Slaughter. He's coming back from that Achilles injury, but there's still a recovery and a learning curve for him.
Oh, sure. Slaughter might turn out to be a pleasant surprise this year, but it could also be one of those years where maybe he plays a little special teams, maybe he never gets healthy. You just don't know what you're going to have with him, and he's good to have for depth in the future. But I think it tells you something that the second coaching staff has been impressed with Tashaun Gibson.
Yep.
Last year, Pat Shurmur loved the kid. You know, came in undrafted, nobody ever heard of him. And, you know, Shurmur played him right away, then he moved him in the starting spot. So this is the second staff, which means the guy has some skill there. And I was talking to one of the veterans, and he said, you know, I thought we might go sign a free agent, but we didn't. He goes, I think Gibson can do this job. So I'm anxious to see him maybe get a whole season there and see if he can kind of entrench himself. Because, you know how it goes, Vic. If you're going to be a good playoff team, you need to get some guys from obscure places, undrafted free agents.
Right.
You know, you make a trade where a guy comes in and he turns into a starter. So if you can get an undrafted guy to become your full-time free agent starter, you really hit upon something.
And the other undrafted guy who has a prominent part in this defense, at least right now through these – it showed it through the offseason workouts, is Craig Robertson lining up next to DeQuell Jackson at inside linebacker.
Yeah, you know, and he's – I think it shows you a little something about the philosophy because he's the fastest of the linebackers. You know, you got LJ Ford could be in that mix and JMJ and Tank Carter. Those guys can all start next to DeQuell, but none of them runs close to as well as Craig Robertson does. So that's what this off their defense is looking for, and they're looking to create pressure and even from the inside spot. So you could see DeQuell rush, you could see Craig Robertson rush. And I was impressed with Craig last year. I hadn't seen any of him. And then he comes out and he played a ton in nickel. You know, I think he played more than 50% of the snaps. And I thought he acquitted himself really well last year.
Yeah, I think so as well. Scott, there's so much I know we can talk about. And we'll just keep this conversation going throughout the offseason and then into training camp. But thank you so much. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good, Vic.
All right. He is Scott Petrick from the Elyria Chronicle-Telegram. He joins us on the Revel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, and we have got much more coming up for you on this Football Tuesday edition on ESPN 850 WKNR.